If you ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer, right?
These are steps we all must take to protect Scotland.
The people of Scotland will not be disrespected by this Parliament. Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, everyone. I'm not really sure about what time you're listening to this podcast, so I thought I'd cover all the bases. Welcome to the second episode of the second season of Scottish Politics Explained. Last week, we had a lovely chat with journalist and author Eve Livingston, and we covered the basics about unions, so what a union is and how they work, how you can find your relevant one, and if you want, join one. Today, we are shifting slightly away from our usual topics to offer you a great and accessible guide to fact-checking. Now, you might ask yourself, this is a politics podcast. Why should I care about fact-checking? Well, when you're reading the news or researching online, be it for your assessments or general interest, it's very easy to come across information that is not exactly reliable. However, it's not equally easy to spot this information as not reliable. So I thought we could have a chat covering tips and advice that you can use in your everyday life to spot misinformation or straight up fake news, be it on your news feed or on your social media feed or just in life. For this reason, I am joined today by Alistair Bryan from investigative media outlet The Ferret. Hi, Alistair. How are you today?
I'm okay. Yeah, how are you doing?
Oh, good, thank you. So you work at The Ferret as a fact-checking lead. Would you like to tell us a bit about, you know, The Ferret and your role in it? What does a fact-checker do in the first place?
Yeah, so The Ferret is an investigative news website. We have been going for 5 years now. And so basically what we do, what The Ferret does in general is stories, less like news stories or day-to-day news stories, and more in-depth, long form things such as, you know, asking questions and looking kind of behind the scenes, trying to find out things that aren't sort of publicly available. The fact checking side of that is a thing that we started in 2017, and it's basically, broadly speaking, we look at politicians and public figures and what they say and check it for accuracy, and then also things like viral memes, like graphics, things that are shared on social media, across social media platforms, and those are getting read by a lot of people and seen by a lot of people. We try and fact check them for accuracy as well.
I've seen you recently that an infographic that was shared by, what was it, John Sweeney? Yeah, John about Sweeney. COVID. So yeah, that's incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a role that we definitely need, especially because we consume so much data and information online, and there's also, like, you know, significant part of misinformation within that, and our lives have basically, you know, moved virtually for the past year and a half as well.
Yeah.
So you come from a professional perspective on this, and I'm quite curious to know, you know, of course, as you said, The Ferret doesn't really do live news, but as a journalist, I would imagine that you keep up with the news. So how do you consume it? And do you have any preferences when it comes to formats, like, I don't know, video, podcasts, articles?
Well, I tend to, but just because of my job, I mean, I've worked in live news before at various points during my career, and tend to consume a hell of a lot of news just because of my job is kind of like requires quite a lot of like monitoring of media. So because we're like trying to find out what we're trying to like see what stuff people are saying and see what stuff is being seen by a lot of people, we are constantly monitoring different news sources, different, you know, what's being said in Parliament, what's being said on TV, what's been said on you know, people are saying on Twitter, what people are saying on Instagram, etc., what people are saying on all different platforms, and what things are being shared. So I tend to get a pretty wide variety of media, both good and bad. So, you know, for example, like most people try and curate their like what media they look at based on either by, you know, what kind of chimes with their views, or what they kind of see as accurate. I would say that, you know, every media outlet has the potential to say things that are wrong, but some have higher standards of accuracy than others. You know, for example, people criticize the BBC, for example. They get criticized a lot for various things to do with their bias or etc. And I think they've got problems, but I think in terms of accuracy of their reporting, they're pretty high up, relatively speaking. The Guardian, very good for investigative reporting. The Financial Times, particularly during COVID, they've been really good for doing like graphics and data and kind of explaining things in a way, a way that's quite easy to understand. I think it varies because people now consume news in really different ways. Like the generation before my generation, everybody obviously was getting news from newspapers primarily. Now, most people I know don't buy newspapers or even see newspapers. It's just about, you know, getting news from where you think it's going to be accurate. That I would say also try and make sure that I get a variety of different sources. So don't just go to one place, because while you might trust the information from one place on certain issues, you might necessarily not, you know, might not necessarily trust it on other issues. So just getting a sort of widespread of news is, I think, a really good thing. And also reading it with a sort of critical eye.
But looking at how, you know, kind of the new trends in consuming news, yeah, there are quite a few recent studies that look at basically millennials and Gen Z. So mm-hmm. we're talking people born from 1981 onwards. And they rely a lot on social media, I think.
Yeah.
From the murder of George Floyd, Instagram has become quite popular in terms of, you know, like infographics mm-hmm. and sharing news or even like analysis on phenomena.
Yeah.
But of course, being a highly visual platform, it's not as if you can click through and verify yeah. news. So if you had to give, you know, kind of basic advice on how to fact check information, kind of everyday yeah, yeah. fact checking, what would you say?
Well, I think you make a really good point. I think that Instagram and TikTok, for example, Snapchat, other formats which are visual based rather than, you know, Facebook, quite often the information that you're getting from Facebook people will include a link, or it's easy to include a link to the source. That's not to say that Facebook isn't a big driver of disinformation, which, because it is. When you say you're on Instagram and you're looking, you see a graphic or an image that you think seems a bit suspect, I would always say, you know, there's a few different things you can do. Primarily, if for example, it's an infographic that's got some claim of information on it, I would just, first of all, just Google the information. I mean, that's as simple as that. Just literally go get any bit of information that you see, you think might seem a bit like dodgy. Just Google the information and see where else it's being reported. So it doesn't require you to go to the original, necessarily go to the original source of the, you know, the government report that it's based on, or into the data, which is the sort of stuff that we have to do. But if you're just, you know, going about your sort of daily business and looking on social media about various things, just Google the information, see where else it's been reported, and see whether or not you trust the sources that it comes from. That can be, you know, quite often you'll find if something's not potentially real, it'll have a headline. The kind of main line of the thing might not really respond and kind of interact with the content of the information. So they might go for a sort of big headline, like used to be called clickbait, where there's a big headline that kind of gets you into, oh my God, this is a big issue. And then you look a bit further down, or you do a little bit of research, and you realize actually the reality of the situation is a lot less exciting and a lot less extreme. Also, look, if you're on Instagram, check that, like, you can check who's sharing it. So there's obviously some accounts which are verified, some which aren't. There's a lot of accounts which just aggregate memes and you know, a political kind of graphic, etc. If you don't, if you can look at their other articles, you can see, if you look at their other posts, you'll be able to see where they might be able to see what political viewpoint they're coming from, or whether or not they're sharing things which you again know which aren't true. And just kind of look at the kind of context around what you're looking at. So rather than just taking as read the thing that you see, look at the source, look at, like, Google it and see if there's anywhere else reporting it, see if there's anything, you know, more credible sources that you recognize, are, you know, a few different sources are reporting it. You can do things like, if you have the image, you can screenshot the image, or you can, if you're able to download the image, which, you know, you can on some platforms, some you can't, you can use reverse image search on Google. So that means just going to Google Images and tapping the little camera icon, then you can reverse search the image, and that might give you more context around it. So a good example for that would be, like, if you see a seemingly too good to be true, like, visual image which you think might be manipulated or might have been used out of context, what quite often happens is that the images you see aren't necessarily Photoshop. Some of them obviously are, but some of them are just not from the context at which they claim they're from. So a good example we always use when we're doing training is a picture of a shark in floodwater. I don't know if you've seen it before. It's a very famous image of a shark that's supposedly in on a motorway in floodwater, and a motorway going, and a car's like taking a photo out its window. That's a really famous Photoshopped image that's been taken from a sort of magazine from 2005. But again, it pops up again and again and again and again. Every time there's a flood, or every time there's some sort of, like, mm-hmm. thing where floodwater might be involved, you'll see this image popping up on Twitter and on Facebook and on all the social platforms. And just, you'll see that and think, is it too good to be true? Use your sort of normal, whenever you're on, you know, if you see something, generally speaking, you'll be skeptical, be like, oh, does that seem real? Does it seem real? It seems a bit too good to be true. Quite often, just with the simple Google, you can find out that it's not. So it's about kind of being like critical in with what you see online rather than just accepting it. And primarily, if you're going to share something, you need to be sure that it's right. Don't just share it for the clicks or likes or whatever. Make sure that you are sharing something once it's been verified in as much as you can.
Yeah, definitely. What do you find are kind of the most common, it doesn't need to be news, but maybe even like topics that are kind of a source of misinformation?
Well, at the moment, COVID is the primary source of, well, kind of the primary source we're finding of misinformation. So for the last, since the lockdown, pretty much in March last year, the majority of what we've done at FFS has been fact-checking COVID, various COVID claims. Particularly at the start of the pandemic, there was loads of really kind of quite wild stuff going about. I think in situations which are like really, and this is not just COVID, this refers to all situations that are really quick moving and people don't know what's going on. It's at those situations that misinformation spreads fast, and people who are doing it on purpose or people who are doing it accidentally, that's when, you know, this information can spread widely because people just don't know what's going on. I mean, particularly at the start of the COVID pandemic, even, you know, the scientists, politicians, everyone was scrambling around to work out what we were going to do.
And the science was also...
Yeah, shifting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was changing constantly. Remember when we weren't in lockdown yet, but my mum was, because my family's from Italy.
Yeah.
And she would call me and she'd be like, oh no, you need to buy masks and this and this and that. And we had like articles saying that masks weren't useful. I was like, no, it's fine.
Yeah, well, so. I think, and also... that's when misinformation kind of really grows, because as you say, we were all being told that masks weren't useful, and then obviously that the information changed. But I think people who have an agenda against things and who are, you know, prone to believing conspiracy theories or whatever will use these sort of things as a aha look where they've changed their minds on that. But it's worth, you need to understand as well that scientific information constantly evolves in every situation. You know, more research gets done, more studies get done, and our viewpoints on things change. The problem with when you're in a COVID-19 situation is it's all really compacted and really extreme, because usually a lot of this sort of advancement of scientific knowledge happens behind the scenes, and we don't really, and it's not really that, it really affect us in day-to-day life. Do you know what I mean? But in a COVID situation, it's really, really quick. But yeah, COVID, I mean, works in a similar way to, you know, when there's a terrorist attack or when there's a natural disaster or when there's, these are much more self-contained events, but misinformation is shared all the time. People will know, for example, if there's been a terror attack or some sort of shooting event or something, you're on social media, quite often there'll be pictures, unattributed pictures of supposedly the person who was behind it or one of the victims that are being shared all over social media without attribution, without like people knowing where it's come from. Quite often it's just a picture from either a previous attack or it's just somebody randomly who, you know, I mean, it could be as simple as two, like some folks, like somebody they don't like at school going, aha, it'd be funny if we got like showed his picture and said he was the guy behind this. And it's the sort of thing that now, because you're on the internet, that can go and, you know, spread around the whole world. And then it, you know, people's lives can be kind of really affected by it. So it's just being really aware that in situations like COVID and stuff like that, that there is going to be misinformation about, and being like, don't share something unless you're really sure about it. And, you know, for example, if there's something supposedly from the scene of an event, look at the person's social media feed. Are they actually there or are they just sharing it? And then, you know, you don't necessarily know if it's accurate or not. But yeah, so at the moment, COVID, but then also it is the kind of big misinformation thing. But previously, Brexit, Scottish independence, day-to-day politics is fairly kind of full of it, I have to say.
Yeah, fair enough. So in this landscape, what would be your advice for people who don't come from a media background and they have to understand what's going on? What are the sources that you would advise?
Well, I would always think what's really good about, not to sort of blow my own trumpet and the kind of fact-checking, like to promote fact-checking that much, but I would say now, compared to 10 years ago, now there's so many fact-checkers in almost every country in the world, some of whom have been doing their work for 10 plus years. So now if you do see things, you know, and you do see claims, quite often if you Google it, a fact-checker will have done some work for you. So you don't have to do the you don't have to kind of do the fact checking work, because there will be a fact check on it. So then, particularly with COVID, like there was a massive effort of across the world, because it was one of the first things I can think of where misinformation was being shared across, the same misinformation was being shared across the world about the same issues. So the sort of fake remedies that were coming up for COVID in the UK were also coming up in Australia, were also coming up in Africa, they're also coming up in, you know, in the US. They were coming, you know, it was across the world, the same things are being shared. I would say if you see something that's kind of widely shared, check websites like, I use the example at Full Fact, which is the UK's biggest fact checking charity. PolitiFact does politics in the US. That's really good. If you're talking about more stuff that's like viral images and stuff that's not political, then Snopes is a really, really good one. They've been kind of doing it for years, and were kind of my first exposure to fact checking when I was like in my teens, like, because they were just, every time you would see, like, they even started with, I remember when, going as far back as chain emails, when that was a thing, which is like, makes it sound like it's, you know, 20 years ago. They were doing it, they've been doing it since then, and they're still kind of doing like a great amount of work. I would say, yeah, if you're not in, if you don't know much about the media, then, and you don't know, like, you're not that kind of well-versed in the kind of UK's media culture, then it's worth knowing, you know, I would suggest like the BBC, obviously they have their problems, but just in terms of pure like factual reporting, they are good. But it's worth knowing and trying to have a look when you are reading articles and like the social media feeds of newspapers and media companies, just having a look at what their biases are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not to say that everything that you read, everything you read that's in the Daily Mail is going to be a lie. But if you read the Daily Mail, if you're reading the Daily Mail to get, you know, information about refugees or about, you know, Brexit or whatever, it's worth being aware that this newspaper has got a particular viewpoint which they're pushing through their articles. So being aware of that, and being aware when you, if you're, you know, say if you're not from the UK and you come to the UK, have a look and sort of scout around and look online and see what people are saying about these newspapers, what's the kind of political viewpoint they're coming from. The good thing you get in, the advantage you get in broadcast, like TV media, is that things like BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Sky News are regulated slightly more tightly. So they've held to impartiality standards that the newspapers aren't. So it's worth mentioning that. But also no news organization is infallible, and you know they're going to have some level of bias within them, but it's just worth kind of being aware and not reading just one source.
I mean, even the single person has, you know, their own bias. Exactly, just because of human nature. But you have your own podcast as well. Would you like to maybe, you know, talk a bit about that and the work you do?
Yeah, so the FFS Show podcast started in January, end of January, our fact-checking podcast. It's basically a mixture of us talking through fact-checks that we've done during the week, sort of giving a bit more of a wider view on the fact-checks which we've been writing, but also interviewing people who are about fact-checking, about like misinformation things around the world. So, for example, we've interviewed people about QAnon, which is the conspiracy, how to describe it, which is the...
it's everything.
US-based conspiracy about how Donald Trump was fighting against a sort of cabal of Satanists, which, you know, using the tools which we've talked about in this podcast, I think most people will be thinking that probably isn't true. And you're right, it's not true. But it's really interesting, and like it's had a massive impact in the US in recent years. We've also talked about how to talk to journalist Peter Gagan about how these things are quite often funded, how disinformation and misinformation can be funded, and how quite often the stuff you see on your social media feed, like political stuff you see in your social media feed, might be funded by people for a political reason. It's not just people sharing it. There are kind of bad actors behind it who might be trying to pursue a certain agenda. And if you're on your feeds, you won't necessarily know where it's come from. So yeah, we do a bit of fact checking and a bit of talking rubbish to each other and a bit of interviewing people. So yeah, it's a kind of mixture of stuff. But it's been really well received, and we're, I think, being quite a useful thing for us, because I think quite often, it's good in general when you're fact checking to get as many people in as possible, obviously, because you're trying to get to a wide audience. Mm-hmm. And there's some people who won't want to read an article, and they might not see us on social platforms, but they are in, like, you know, obviously everybody loves podcasts.
Yeah, and also makes, you know, makes kind of the people behind the fact checking more visible and like more relatable.
Yeah,
so it's a good listen, definitely. So that was my last question. So, well, thank you so much, Alistair, for coming on the podcast. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Noah, thanks for having me. It was a nice chat.
This was the second episode of the new season of Scottish Politics Explained. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can find a link to our Ko-fi in the description of this episode, along with all the resources mentioned by Alistair. You can find The Ferret on all the main social media platforms, as well as at theferret.scot. As for Scottish Politics Explained, you can follow us at ScotPol Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and you can find the transcripts to all of our episodes at scottishpoliticsexplained.wordpress.com. Thank you so much for listening.